This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.
To the whole show, Dustin Urbis, Mike Danson, doing our best to fill in for Brady today. If you want to join the conversation, 888-530-0043. This hour, we're going to spend a lot of time on the Avalanche, maybe hit on the Rockies a little bit, and then we have the Bold Durham movie review in that final hour. So, Derbs, as we were just sitting here talking, the Avalanche, and one of the things that I I'm kind of looking at, and I'm trying to find an answer to this question. Maybe you can give me an answer. Besides injuries, take injuries out of the question here. What scares you in this Minnesota series for the Avalanche at this point?
Minnesota is very good. So I don't think the first two games kind of dictate the whole story. They're beat up a little bit too. But what scares me the most is them winning two games in Minnesota and then having the pressure come back here.
Yeah.
If they win one of them in Minnesota, then I think that kind of, it tones down the temperature a little bit. But I think don't discredit Minnesota, I think, would be the thing to really evaluate here.
I look at this series and I really go, if the Avalanche win this third game, then the series is over at that point. This third game is so important for Minnesota. It's absurd because if you go down 3-0 to the Avalanche, you're not going to win, four in a row against them. So getting this game, Minnesota is going to give their absolute best shot.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche rarely lose back-to-back games in the regular season, so trying to get four straight from them would be probably the tallest of tasks. News out of Minnesota is that no Erickson Ek or Mark Zuccarello in the line rushes. They both were on the ice for practice, but didn't actually participate in any of the line rushes. So I'm going to assume at least Erickson Ek is probably a slim go for game three, and that could be another tough series.
And I told you, I pay attention to Minnesota sports being a Vikings fan, so I hear a lot of the stuff, and they were giving Erickson Ek a 5% chance of playing tonight, so that one's out. And I think that's probably the bigger one out of the two for that Minnesota team.
Yeah, I would say so. He does a lot of the dirty work around the talent of Quinn Hughes and Kirill Kaprizov. Both of those two guys can absolutely take over a game too. They're spectacular to watch.
One thing I loved in game two for the Avalanche, though, Quinn Hughes is playing a lot of minutes for the Wild, and every time he got close to a puck, that guy was taking a shot. And I love it because he's not the biggest of defensemen. He's super talented skater back there. I don't know that he's considered like an offensive defenseman, but he's such a talented skater that he can make things happen. He's not a big guy, but every time he was out there near a puck, he was getting hit by the Avalanche. And I love that because he's playing so many minutes.
Yeah, that's 100% by design. That's got to be bulletin board material in the Avs locker room, is that anytime that you can hit or touch him, do. Yeah, he's going to play a ton of minutes. Kirill Kaprizov is going to play a ton of minutes with these injuries because Matt Boldy is going to play a ton of minutes. Those guys, they're the straw that stirs the drink. So they're kind of forced into that hand because they don't have the depth that the Avs have. They have to be out there.
And talk about the depth that the Avalanche have. It's spectacular. Like every line is contributing through these playoffs so far. The one thing that I'm really happy to see is we saw a little bit of life from that power play in game two.
Yeah, I think the Avs are up to 13 different playoff goal scorers now on the team, which is, I mean, basically you have 24-ish guys out there at any time. So half the roster is scored. Is a nice sign. But yeah, they're all contributing. They all know their role too. I mean, I think the power play is finally starting to get there. You saw it in the regular season where it would just stick to one side too much. And then they try to make the perfect pass and it would get tipped and then it would be exited out fairly easily over and over and over. Now you're starting to see like the real threat of MacKinnon on one side, Natchez on the other side, and our guy, the captain, in the middle, making it all work. It is nice.
And I just, this team, what Landeskog has meant coming back to this team, and we kind of talked about it with the leadership stuff, and just what he brings to the table. And it's not like he still is an amazing player, but that leadership part and bringing this group together is just fantastic.
Yeah, he's the accountable person, you know, that we were talking about with the Nuggets, things like who's the guy. Everyone knows. Whether or not he was off the ice with an injury or if he's on the ice now, everybody knows that Gabe Landeskog is the guy in that locker room. He just does the little things. He'll stand up and he'll get in a fight if you need him to. I mean, he'll go out there, he'll score two goals if you need him to. He'll be in front of the net and take on the big guys and tip pucks all night if he has to. He will do anything that is needed to be done.
How huge is this? They played Tuesday night and now they're not going to play until Saturday. This big break, for me, it's huge for Wedgwood, honestly, because going game after game after game after game, you're really not going to throw that second goalie out there unless you absolutely have to. So getting Wedgwood this extra couple days of rest in between games here is just, it's fantastic for the Avalanche.
Yep, they're the oldest team left in the playoffs. I think they average like 31 point something years of age. So anytime we're getting extra days off helps us. That we're not the rust versus rest thing here. This team will take any sort of time off and it'll always benefit them.
What do you think Minnesota is going to do different? Because they've played kind of two different games against the Avs. That first game, they wanted to try to skate with the Avalanche, which there's not a team in the NHL that can do that. And then this last game, it was a little bit more physical, kind of slowed down a little bit more puck control. Do you try to find something in the middle of those two? Or I think Minnesota, if they're not playing the Avalanche, they want to play that wide open game, but it's tough against the Avs to do that.
Yeah, the first goal is important for them. They've been behind the entire time. So when you're trying to chase down the Colorado Avalanche and speed it up by trying to get back on the board, typically that ends worse than where you already are.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that they're going to try to muck it up a little bit more. They want a 3-2, 2-1, and just kind of see if they can get some luck on their side that, you know, a couple sneak through Wedgwood and then they can kind of really hammer in front of the net and just put bodies there.
And that's where I was scared with that Minnesota and Dallas. I didn't want to see Dallas because they do such a good job of messing it all up for the way the Avs want to play. That's the game they play all the time. So it's natural for them to play that way. And they do a very good job. So I was really happy when Minnesota won that series.
Yeah, I was too. I don't enjoy watching like the LA Kings and the Dallas Stars type hockey. It's gross. You feel like there's seven guys on the ice out there playing when there's really five. Yeah. And it's a nasty old school way of playing. And I like the little bit more of the freedom. I don't necessarily want to see 9-6, but I like the 4-2, 5-2, somewhere around there where you can really see the talent on the ice. But I'm looking forward to game three because you are right. I mean, Minnesota has to give everything. Like they have no other option. If they lose that game, it's it. And I want to see how the Avalanche respond to that. You know, if they come out and they fire and they get the first one in the first period, I think it's going to be
done a good job of.
Yep. I think it's going to be an awfully long night again.
Yeah. And, we had talked about something like during the break and then I was going to bring it up and then, anyways, this is just me losing it every once in a while. But, we were talking about Cale Makar and, A guy that I hear on Minnesota sports stuff a bit is Mark Parrish. He was a guy who kind of managed in front of the net and stuff like that when he was playing. He played for the Wild. He played for the Avs. He played for, I think it's like eight different teams. But in the long run, he was talking about how he thinks Cale Makar is going to pass Bobby Orr and be the best defensive player ever in the history of the NHL. And at that moment, I was like, there's no way. Like, is he that good? And then you'd look at the stats, and he is.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think we take for granted a little bit of the last 5 years of him, four and a half years of him. He's just special in every way. He's very good at handling the puck, obviously. He's very speedy. He can create. I think his blue line work doesn't get enough credit because he saves an awful lot of pucks from exiting yep. the zones. Even the little wrist shots from the top of the zone that you don't think are a threat are always hitting the corners. It's like those little things that you just always have to be on your toes for. He does extremely well. And yeah, I mean, he's on pace to pass major, major records. He's up for best defenseman of the year again. I'd be shocked if he didn't win that award. That's getting to be where it's just an all offensive defensive award. Yeah, which sounds weird.
Yeah, it's like the MVP award in football. It might as well just be the quarterback awards.
So. Yeah, it was zero chance that it's got to be a skill position or a defensive player. Yeah. You got to do something ridiculous to be up there. But yeah, he's incredible. I can't give a whole lot of knocks on him other than sometimes, you know, when he gets behind the net a little bit, he spends a little bit too much time down there, and then it puts an awful lot of pressure on the back end guys. But when you have special players, you just let them be who they are.
Yeah, and special players is what this team has. Like, yeah. Two of the top five guys probably in the NHL, the whole NHL, are on this Avalanche team with Makar and MacKinnon. And MacKinnon, I still... When I'm watching games, sometimes I'm still amazed how fast that guy is when he's coming through the zone and he just carries the puck through everybody. And it's just like, holy smokes. Like, I try to ice skate and it's not good. But
yeah, between him and Marty and Cale, I mean, they'll reach close to 30 miles an hour if you think about that. Like, that is, I mean, we're driving down like towns going 30 miles an hour in a car.
Yeah.
You know, and they're on ice skates that. Against big people,
yeah.
Just flying. It's fun to watch in person. It's the one sport that I always encourage that if you haven't been to a hockey game, you're not even really a hockey fan, go watch it live and it'll change your opinion on everything.
Yeah, you'll absolutely enjoy it. And it doesn't have to be go and watch the Avalanche either.
Yeah.
Like any in-person hockey game is fantastic.
Yeah, 100%.
Micah, what you got?
Hockey's so exciting live. Everybody has said it before, but like, tough to follow the puck on TV, so easy to follow it on live. It just is.
Yeah,
and hockey fans are a different breed. They're just different than any other fans.
It's a wide variety of fans too. It's a lot of families. It's women. It's men. All ages, races, styles, everybody seems to love it.
Yeah, I legitimately thought Micah was going to come in with sarcasm there. But no, he actually does like hockey and going live.
Yeah, I've only been to a couple games. The last one was just so exciting because it was Avalanche, Red Wings, and the Avs beat up on the Red Wings. And that, I mean, that just warms my heart.
Yeah.
I will always... I hate the Red Wings a lot less than I do the Raiders, but the Red Wings will be the Raiders of the NHL to me, always.
That used to be. I wish that didn't go away with the realignment because that was a real thing. I mean, now it's kind of the Stars that neither of the teams like each other, but I don't think it'll ever have that intensity of the Red Wings.
Man, those playoff runs were ridiculous when they would match up together. There was like a documentary, maybe it was like a 30 for 30 ESPN thing about that rivalry, and man, I kind of forgot how intense that was, but it was crazy.
Yeah, goalie fights too, guys going over the boards, pushing people into the benches and like not letting them get out.
Yeah.
Blood being spilled between teams.
Was a lot of blood.
It was nasty out there. Just real quick, I pulled up Cale Makar's stats because I didn't think that they were this good. 470 games played. 136 goals, 371 assists for 507 points. His plus-minus rating for the entire time that he's been on the ice is +168.
Oh, my gosh.
And 134 penalty minutes as a defenseman over, let's see, 7 years, and spent basically half the time in 19 and 20 just joining the Avalanche, where he didn't get a full go as a rookie there. Those are incredible things to me. The plus minus rating of 168 is absolutely wild.
It's insane.
Yeah.
That's we got another text here. Eastside Chris chiming in saying the only team that can beat the Avs is the Avs. They got to focus.
Yeah, I agree. Mike and I spoke a little bit off the air. I think it's going to be the Avs and the Canes for the finals. And I think it's just going to be hilarious that both of those teams dumped Mikko Rantanen and are going to end up going for a title. But I agree. I think the Avalanche are the only teams that can beat the Avalanche. They're a special group.
Well, and that's – we were just both Derbs and I like to partake in some of the gambling that is available for entertainment purposes only. I think I have to say stuff like that when I talk about gambling. But Carolina is +160 to win the cup, and the Avs are +165. So right in there, and we kind of talked about that. It's probably just because Carolina is going to have a little bit easier path to get to the finals.
Yeah, and then beating Philadelphia, they're one game closer.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would imagine if the Avs win game three, then those odds probably flip a little bit, where the Avs are probably in the +130 range, 140 range. So if you like yourself a little plus money right now, I don't hate that, because they're better than even odds to get there. So I think anything above plus money is good on the Avs right now.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Micah, let's grab our first break here. You're listening to the whole show with a couple of fill-ins, Dustin Urbis and Mike Danson. My gosh, why am I struggling so much with the call sign here? 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
To Coach Bruce Dick on winning the Colorado High School Coaches Association 2026 Media Award. Hear Coach speak with Bruce Dick, weekdays at 10 on KFKA.
Hey, this is Ed Lamb, head football coach of the UNC Bears. You're listening to the whole show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into the Hall Show. Dustin Urbis and Mike Danson in for Brady today. I'm just waiting for one of you guys to give me a hard time for just struggling with the call sign today for some reason.
I'm going to make one of those, that Notre Dame sign that says play like a champion today. Yeah. I'm going to put one of those right in that big old window that Mike is behind right now. That's,
Micah even wrote me a note and set it here beside me, and I still just, I get to that spot and I go, what am I doing again?
Where am I?
Yeah.
Remember when you hosted that show on Saturdays?
Yeah. I used to be a lot
better
rusty, at this.
You're rusty. You're rusty. That's fine.
Yeah.
You're not the first person to screw up frequencies and stuff. It happens.
Yeah.
Like the Ricky Bobby. Like, what do I do with my hands?
Exactly. It's weird how my mind would just go blank, though. I'm like all into it, and then I'm like, what am I supposed to do now? Like, I don't. Whatever, man. You know, I'm a little bit rusty. I'm just happy that I've been able to shout out the text line here, and I've kind of looked over there and picked that up. But if you want to shoot us a text, it's 888-530-0043. Shoot us a text on your thoughts and feelings.
Anything
sports or anything, whatever. Yeah. We'll talk about other stuff.
Absolutely.
In the third hour, we'll be talking about Bull Durham. Derbs and I both watched that movie in the past week, and we'll review it. So let's dig into the NHL playoff situations as it is right now. And the NHL is kind of weird because you have one series, they've only played one game, and you have one series that's played three games. So it's a little bit different, but we'll end with the Avs and the Wild and finish with them. But Let's start with the other Western Conference series. Vegas Golden Knights, Anaheim Ducks, tied at one, which kind of surprised me. I was happy to kind of see Anaheim come back and fight a little bit against Vegas this last game. But what direction do we think that series is going to go?
Like personal views for me, I want to see the Ducks win. I think they're fun to watch. They have good uprising stars. Jackson Lacombe, he was on Team USA as an alternate defenseman. He played a little bit and then like the provisional rounds, the round robins and things, but didn't see much ice time when it mattered. But he's a rising star. Leo Carlson is an incredible scorer, playmaker. They have some veteran guys like Chris Kreider that came over from the Rangers last year. So they have a nice mix of a team in the making. And I kind of like when they start to figure it out. And honestly, I don't know why I don't like Vegas, but I just don't like them.
Vegas is kind of a weird situation because they're one of the teams that fired their coach a month ago, around that. And they kind of moved on and here they are now with the chance to get into the Western Conference Finals.
This is kind of what John Tortorella does. He did this with, I want to say, Philadelphia, probably 6-7 years ago. He's an incredible coach for 15 games.
Mike has given me, you said 6-7.
Oh,
Mike has given
me
doing
the hand signs. Kids.
Yeah. He's getting in touch with the nieces and nephews of high school age.
My kids walk around doing this all the time, and I'm like, I don't understand. I don't even know what this means. But
should have said 7-8.
That would have been way better. Let's start at Derbs. You and I.
Yeah, we'll just put
7-8.
Yeah, put
push down.
Downwards instead. Yeah, there we go. But yeah, that's what John Tortorella does. He's an old style coach, and he can light a fire under a team. So I think that was a good move by Vegas to kind of spark them a little bit. And then the Ducks have Joel Quenneville, which he got a little bit of trouble in his St. Louis days of some off the ice interactions, I guess. So he was kind of not welcome.
It's former Avalanche coach.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. But the Ducks brought him back in and he's kind of that steady motion too. Cause I mean, 80% of that roster is young guys. So he's kind of the older guy that keeps it all together there. I want to see Anaheim win bad, but they play both teams play a well-balanced, good style of hockey. It's fun to watch.
Let's go over to the Eastern Conference. Carolina and Philadelphia, that's a 3-0 series. It's pretty much over at this point.
Yeah, that one's done. Philadelphia is just a weird team. All year long, they don't shoot the puck a lot. They play that defensive gross style. But when they get against teams that can score or shoot more often and kind of just create styles, they have a hard time with, and that's what they ran into Carolina here. Carolina, I believe, led the league in shots on goal this year. None of them all are high danger or threatening, but they just kind of constantly pester you with shots.
That's what's crazy about hockey is you get it up around the net, you never know what kind of bounce you're going to get, and it may just shoot out to somebody that has a wide open net.
Yep, and that's kind of, they've dominated that series. I mean, I don't think there's no chance that I don't think Philadelphia even gives them a run at it.
So, and the other series in the Eastern Conference, this is the one that they've only played one game in the series so far, Buffalo and Montreal. Buffalo is a super gritty team that I really like watching.
Yeah, with a superstar too, and Tage Thompson. Back to Team USA, he was one of the great players for them. He's a large human. I think he's 6'8", I believe, and is incredibly skilled.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun.
Put him on skates.
Yeah, put him on skates. He's probably 7'4". But it's a good story too. They haven't made the playoffs in a zillion years. And the same with Montreal. Obviously it's a Canadian thing, and it's their national sport. Just watching the crowd in Montreal is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like those opening kind of ceremonies where they sing the anthems and they get the players going and how loud it is. It's a cool thing. I actually really enjoy that.
Well, and what year are we on for Canada not winning the Stanley Cup? It's a lot of years now in a row that the Canadian teams have not been able to win a Stanley Cup.
I'm not sure the last time that they have been in a cup final between Toronto, Montreal, Winnipeg.
Edmonton was...
Edmonton last year.
Yeah.
But before that, it's been a pretty long stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
we're just taking over their sport.
Yeah, we're gonna own that too. But yeah, no, I actually like Montreal's style of play. They're young too. Cole Caulfield is a big star. He scored 50 goals this year. Very good. That should turn into more of an interesting series that I think Buffalo will end all come out on top. But that should be a long series,
looking like a 7-gamer too.
Yep.
And then we've talked about the Avs and the Wild a bit. What other thoughts do you have about the Avs and Wild that we may not have hit on?
Just hoping for health, I guess, is all that we can kind of come out with. There's a couple of things I want to see cleaned up, and that's the defenseman area. I know Josh Manson being out hurts them quite a bit because he's the physical presence. Just getting some continuity between the rest of the guys of Kulak and Blankenberg and Burns a little bit to get on the same page. You're always going to have the steady thing with Taves and Makar, but the other guys, they need a little bit of work.
And I had heard a interview with Bednar on another, just listening to interviews, I guess, and they asked him, is there any update on Manson? And he goes, nope.
Yeah,
and that's all he said. There was nothing extra to it. He just, we're not going to give out any information to what's going on there.
Yeah, he's kind of on the same plan as Eck, I think. Is he practices and he skates, but he's nowhere close to the line rushes and things. And he might be the case where if they win game three, that you just don't see him and you just let him rehab as long as he needs. And then maybe if they lose game three, then you kind of maybe up his timetable a little bit. But yeah, and he's one of those players too that, like, you need one of those guys that just wants to hit people. And he just, I don't think there's a person that loves him more than him.
Yeah, I was surprised by McKinnon in game two. He definitely took his chances on making some big hits.
Yep. He got a couple of them in the open ice there that you don't see a whole lot out of him, but I think that's there's not a guy that's more fiery that wants to win than Nathan McKinnon. I can't imagine a more intense person than him.
Yeah. Michael, what do you got?
Going back to America's dominance of America Junior, American North, the last time a Stanley Cup a Canadian team has gone to the finals was 2021. That was Montreal, where they lost. The last time a team that is Canadian won was 1993. That was the Montreal Canadiens.
Would that have been Patrick Roy as the goaltender? I think probably at that point.
Is, yeah.
So, there we go.
He was wonderful for that team.
He was, and he came and did the same for the Avs for a bunch of years also. Let's hop out and grab a break here. On the other side, we're going to dig into Rockies talk. You're listening to The Hall Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
There's only one sound like the key tumbling the lock open for the first time. One feeling like finally seeing your place after you've emptied all the moving boxes. That moment when four walls and a roof become the home you've always wanted. If you're on the search for that special place, we're the community bank that'll help you get there. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
This is Harrison Wynn with DNVR Nuggets. You're listening to The Hall Show on 1310 KSKA.
Welcome back into The Hall Show. Dustin Urbis, Mike Danson filling in for Brady today. The text line 888-530-0043. In that final hour, we're going to be reviewing Bull Durham. So shoot us a text about your thoughts about Bull Durham, that movie, and we'll talk about those in that final hour. This segment, next segment, probably going to be a little bit of talk about the Rockies, the Dirty 30 for the boys, Brady and Tanner. They're halfway home with 15 wins.
Will Tanner quit early?
I don't think either one of them quit. No chance.
Yeah, and you know, you have to have a lot more confidence this year doing this than what we've seen the past few years out of the Rockies.
Yeah, I mean, most of the games that I've watched, at least, they're a competitive ball club. Like they're still miles away from being good, but they play in a tough division. It's just They're just a struggle all the time. They seem to always there's one thing that always happens in a game. Like they find ways to lose still.
Yeah, and the thing that I see with this team is it's like one night they get a really good pitching performance and they can't score any runs that night, or oh my gosh, they're scoring a bunch of runs but the pitching is not good. And it's just kind of, they need to be able to find that balance where, you know, maybe they're getting good pitching on the nights that they're hitting. I don't know how you do that necessarily. One of the things that I've kind of been disappointed about this year is Ezekiel Tovar at the plate has really been struggling. I know they gave him yesterday off, I believe.
Yeah, reset day.
A little reset. But if this team is going to, you know, continue to be more competitive, he's going to have to be productive at the plate.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's even got some nights where he's hitting in the 7 and 8 hole.
Yeah, that's I went down last Saturday. I think he was in the 7 hole.
Yeah, and that's for pretty much, if you were to look at the beginning of the season, you would have thought that he would be, you know, 1 through 4 as a cornerstone. I mean, he had a good spring training. He played with it was a Venezuelan team.
Yeah, I think so.
Had a good outing there as a starting shortstop that won the World Baseball Classic. Maybe he's just kind of in a little slump and has got to figure some things out. But you would think that he would be a guy that they're really counting on him to be as the face of the franchise. And now it's probably moving more towards the Hunter Goodmans or maybe even Mickey Moniak at this stage.
Yeah, Moniak is playing really well lately. Yeah. And Jake McCarthy has been hitting the ball very hard lately. Also, a little bit of power coming out of him. The one guy that I'm really excited about, and it's odd because we don't really get to talk about Rockies pitching that much, but Dolander is very impressive. This guy has all the stuff that you need to be a top end starter in the major leagues. Pitching tonight against Philadelphia. So if you want to get out, I don't think you can get out and watch him. I guess if you want to fly to Philadelphia.
You can still, Maggie. You got time.
You got a little bit of time to get out to Philadelphia. But definitely pull that up and watch that game. But Dolander has been a bright spot on the mound.
Yeah, I actually saw some. They have on the internet those weird splits where you can put, you know, two pitchers together and you can see how their pitch type comes out. They threw him next to Jacob deGrom, and it was eerily similar. And Jacob deGrom has been, you know, phenomenal for years now. So to see the Rockies have a guy that has potential to be special is fun. I kind of like what they were doing with him too, and having an opener, maybe that just kind of relieves some of the stress and the jitters of the first inning. The crowd's all into it, and you can settle in maybe a little easier. I don't know, but I kind of like what they've done with him so far.
Well, and it looks like it just says on the mound Chase Dolander tonight,
so he may
just
first go.
Yeah, he may just be getting the start tonight instead of that free inning to kind of relax.
And I think the last game that he was in that bulk role, I don't think Bernardino got out of the first inning and where he had to come in.
That was the Saturday I was at.
Oh, that you went to?
Yeah.
So maybe that was kind of enough of, well, maybe we shouldn't do that again. Maybe we'll just toss him out there and see if he's ready.
Yeah, wouldn't you rather? Like, you don't want to come into a situation where it's like, okay, now I got runners on. I got to make these pitches and get out of the inning. And it didn't really go well.
Wouldn't you just let the opener just eat the first inning no matter what happens?
At that point, I think you have to, especially if you're doing it for like what we're talking about, where it's like get through that first inning and then he can come out without all that pressure right away and start. But you don't want to put him in a more pressure packed situation, I feel like.
Yeah, then you come in there and you're already down 6-0. You feel like you can't let up a hit, or you just have to be perfect. You probably want to get away from that too, I guess. That's a tough situation there.
Yeah, if he's going to get in trouble, like let him get himself in trouble. Don't put him in somebody else's trouble.
He's been good. The offense overall has been good too. They actually hit at a pretty high clip, and the average wise, they're in that, you know, a top half. The last I saw, they were hitting, you know, like 254, 255 as a team. And I mean, that sounds terrible anymore, but that's the upper
baseball.
Spot of baseball is everybody just wants to hit home runs and strike out. And that's kind of what you get. There's not a whole lot of average guys anymore.
You know, one guy that I really like is Kyle Karros, the third baseman. I love that he goes up there and he's going to see pitches. Yep. Like he's going to see five or more pitches pretty much every at bat. And that I think is something that's kind of a lost art form in baseball in the world of strikeout or home run.
Yeah, Johnston and Rumfield kind of do the same thing. They put the ball in play an awful lot. Those are things that encourage me. You know, talking about the Rockies last year, you know, it was just, oh, man, they're going to strike out. Like between 7 to, I think, 14 times a night. And, like, that's just tough to watch. At least, you know, we're getting to the point where I feel like they can win any ball game. You know, they're still going to have their tough nights when they face the top end pitchers, and they still struggle against the sweeper and the curveballs and things. But they do put the ball in play, and they're at least giving themselves some chances, and being 15-23 to start the year. Montesvita told me that a month and a half ago. I'm like, yeah, here we go. All right. Let's build on something.
Yeah. Last year, pitching strikeout ladders on on the gambling sites. The Rockies were always one that I would see what the pitcher against them looked like. And if it was like a plus money on a 6+ strikeout, I was all signed in on that thing.
Give me the plus stuff with a right-hander right now, and you're doing okay.
Exactly. So 15-23. The boys can't shave until they win 30. If you had to guess a date, what are we looking at?
You know, I'm still going to stick with probably like the latter part of June. I think if they can get close, yeah, they've got to get to 2022 probably by the end of the month.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go like latter part of June. You know, like the 24th, 25th, somewhere around there.
I think. All right, I don't think it's gonna make it to the All-Star break, but I'm gonna go with like just a, you know, like maybe the last 3-game series before the All-Star break, they're gonna get it done. So
they have struggled here a little bit recently, to where maybe they're on the downhill climb just a bit, but
no longer April.
I know. That's still not a thing either. They're not good in April either.
Yeah. They're just not good, really. All right. We got one more break this hour. We'll come back and we'll figure out something to talk about before we go to our Bull Durham movie review. Mike Danson, Dustin Irvis in for Brady on the whole show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Congratulations to Coach Bruce Dick on winning the Colorado High School Coaches Association 2026 Media Award. Hear Coach speak with Bruce Dick, weekdays at 10 on KFKA.
This is Christopher Dempsey, your Nuggets insider from Altitude Sports, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into the whole show. Dustin Irvis, Mike Danson filling in for Brady today. We want to dive into some news that broke earlier from the Broncos as they signed GM George Payton to a new 5-year contract. We all kind of agreed that that was a right choice for the Broncos. And they've also signed some of their rookies that they drafted here, Derbs, if you want to go through those.
Yeah, tight end Justin Jolie, safety Miles Scott, tight end Dallin Bentley, and linebacker Red Murdoch, all Denver Broncos, officially.
All Denver Broncos, and Red Murdoch is a guy.
The coolest name of all time.
If that's not a football name, I don't know what is. But this guy is a tackling machine. He is a guy who just has a nose for the ball. I think I saw that he set an NCAA record for forced fumbles, and it's like 17 forced fumbles in his 4 years. He played at a small school. That's probably why he got a little bit overlooked, but gets that Mr. Irrelevant tag on him as the final draft pick of the NFL draft.
I always liked that tag, too. Yeah. I mean, doesn't that just give that person just a little extra juice of going to work out and being ready?
Yeah, I would think so. If you're like, playing a pickup game of basketball and you're the last person picked, you want to show that you're better than that last pick.
Everyone
call me Red Murdoch then.
I don't know what if we had to pick a team and Michael is one of the guys, what game would we, like athletic game, would you pick Micah not last?
Oh, mini golf?
Competitive
sitting. Oh, mini golf.
Competitive sitting.
I don't know. That's not very athletic.
Quesadilla eating?
Oh, I've been watching him through the glass here. He's been crushing quesadillas.
I just had one. I had one quesadilla.
Mountain Dew drinking? Competitive Mountain Dew drinking?
I only have two a day. You guys are making me sound fatter than I already am.
All right. On the other side, we're going to do our Bull Durham movie review. You're listening to The Hall Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.